Welcome to Pazzo's Podcast. I'm Josh, joined by Kevin and Jason as always. And we have a guest, Scott, from Mile Wide Brewing. Very appreciative for him taking the time to come and hang out with us for yet another episode. Enjoying ourselves quite a bit here. During the break, we were talking about the Industrial Revolution, believe it or not, and the impact that that had on glassware, because that's what this episode is all about, episode number 32, all about glasswares. But Kevin, do you want to expand a little bit more on that?
Yes, what that same Industrial Revolution brought along. It also brought along the invention of Pilsner malt. The Pilsen in the city of the Czech Republic, that was the society that decided, let's use some of these hot plates that we're able to basically heat up through the use of steam used through coal, to basically heat things up on these very flat plates, and they could kiln grain that way. So now you actually could kiln grain not over an open fire, which imparted smoke and color and murkiness and nuttiness and all those kind of woozy flavors. It stayed light, it stayed clean, it stayed pure, and so that Pilsner flavor really stuck. So that's the reason why grains that were developed that way took on the name of that city, and they called it Pilsen, the malt from Pilsen, or Pilsner malt. So all the Pilsners that we taste today has that color, it has that character, has that clean taste, and all of a sudden that came along with the same sense of these glass structures that were actually brought to the middle class because now it was cheap. Now it's accessible, and now they could basically put this very clear beer into this very clear glass, and all of a sudden it looked very appealing. It did not look murky anymore. It did not look muddy. It did not look dark. It did not look hazy. They were lagered, say where they were clear. They had a natural way of clarifying themselves. And so it really brought a pristine look to a beer, and that opened up the door for something else. Prior to that, the women made the beer. They were housewives. They made the beer, but then the men drank it. But now that since this thing was put in these very narrow kind of flutes, and they were very tall, they were very elegant, you could see the carbonation streaming from the bottom of this glass all the way to the top of the glass, and it looked like champagne. And women love champagne, so all of a sudden this thing looks like champagne, so it looked the part for them. So women started drinking the beer. So now you expanded your market by 100%. You went from predominantly a male-dominated beverage now to a worldwide-dominated beverage because you made the beer look more appealing. So glassware started there. So it's really kind of neat that that was its humble beginnings, and it's gone a lot of different directions since then. It's really kind of cool to talk about from there. But I spent a whole lot of knowledge of history, glassware, talking about, where Pilsner malt and where, beer glassware fits in. So let me hear your thoughts, guys. You have any thoughts on that?
So I have more questions than I have thoughts. So I want to know, what a Cicerone would take into account when they were choosing a glass for a specific type of beer. I'm thinking carbonation probably is the main thing.
I think there's the first thing you need to account, how drinkable is the beer and what kind of volume does it come in? Okay, is it a very strong beer? It needs a very small vessel. Is it a very drinkable, quaffable, refreshing beer? Is it low alcohol? Needs a bigger vessel. Okay. It starts there. It chooses the kind of the portion size appropriate to the kind of drinkability that you expect a customer to have because of what they ordered.
Yeah, I mean, glassware is pretty far from my area of expertise when it comes to beer. So, I look at something like the Snifter, and that's kind of my utility glass for everything that I drink. Doesn't matter. Like at home, all the glasses that I have, there are no straight wall shaker pints. Everything that I have is a bowl of some sort, whether it's a Tiku or it's, I don't even remember what it's called. It's a big 18-ounce bowl. Side Project uses it. Hill Farmstead uses it. But it's got a wine stem because I like to hold the stem. I like to be able to swirl the beer. I like to be able to really absorb the aroma of the beer. And so big bowl with a focused, with a fluted top so the nose is focused. That's what I look for. When it comes to, I know Willie Becker's are called wheat lager glasses. I don't really know why. They're really cool glasses, and they're great glasses, and I like them a lot. But I don't know a lot of the history.
The fascinating part of the wheat glass is because, number one, because wheat glass, wheat beers, I mean, let's face it, they're 4% or 5% alcohol. So they're meant for a large consumption of liquid. You can drink those things fairly quickly. So you need basically 20 or 24 ounces than those in a glass. However, if you put it in something that's very wide like a mug, all of a sudden that very hazy wheat beer, you start to look through it and it starts to look kind of muddy. That density of the haze really interferes with your impression of how it looks. And so all of a sudden you don't think it looks as good. So what they learned to do is put that wheat beer in something very tall. And even though it is stretched, maybe you know a foot tall or 18 inches tall, maybe even 2 feet tall, that's the size of the vessel it needs, because now what happens is you narrow that vessel to the point where some light from the background can penetrate that, and all of a sudden it doesn't look murky. Now it has this beautiful glow. It looks like a nightlight. It looks like a snow globe. And all of a sudden you have a different impression of what the beer looks, and now it looks more appetizing. So now, even though it's very, very tall, and also whenever everybody else is drinking lagers out of basically a 16 or 20 ounce pint, all of a sudden this wheat beer comes out. It's the same volume, but all of a sudden it looks twice as tall as everybody else's glass. You're like, look, motherfuckers, I'm winning this war. I got this. I'll win the beer game today. So you're going to edit that out, aren't you?
Beep.
There you go. But that's kind of where glassware starts to matter, is how does the beer look? First of all, like chefs, Jason will admit, you know, everybody knows that whenever a plate comes to your table, you decide very quickly whether you like it or not based on its appearance. Beer does the same thing. It does the exact same thing. And so you start with the size of the vessel that really matters. Then all of a sudden you start to choose the shape of the vessel and how it kind of maximizes its appearance or maximizes certain things. Now, here's a cool thing, too, is the way Scott described it. Is like, as like if you're an uber beer geek, you kind of want to focus everything toward the top. In other words, you want to narrow that lip so it comes in a little bit, like a brandy sniffer or a tulip or something like that. What that does is as you drink the beer and as the outgasses, it starts to release these very volatile aromatics, and they kind of collect. If that neck closes a little bit, then it helps to contain this little cloud of aromas that might otherwise be wafted off to the atmosphere.
Which is another reason that I think any discussion of beer glasses has to contain the discussion of the shaker pint and why it is the worst glass possible for beer. And one of the reasons is what you just said, that there's nothing to trap any of those aromas. They're all just being released, whether, you know. And yeah. So the issue with the shaker pint, it was built really for two things. It was built for stackability and durability. So it's thick glass, and so it's not going to feel real good on your mouth when you're taking a drink of it. And it's built to, you know, oh, I can stack five of these and put them, you know, store them easily behind my bar. And
they're really easy to chug beer out of also.
Sure.
That's right.
Sure.
If you don't care about the beer.
Right. Well, then you have things like the English pub glass that, you know, one of the ones we're giving away that, you know, I would say it's not going to slow you down at all.
No, I love the pub glasses. So with chalices like a Chimay or a Rochefort, you know, those do not narrow towards the top. Is there a reason with some beers that you wouldn't want that?
There's a special theory that comes along with Trappist beer and glasses, and that spread throughout Belgium to a lot of other more secular breweries as well. The theory there is, number one, these beers are the most regal beers on the planet. They must be the most adorned ones. That's a carryover since the Middle Ages that we still hold on to. And I think that's very charming. It's very regal. It's very rustic. And it's very true. So anybody that suggests that you should be drinking a Trappist beer or anything else, you're not going to win that argument with me. I'm not going to agree with it. But these very specific glasses for these very specific beers is a real thing. It's a big glass. If you notice, these beers usually come in 12-ounce volumes or 11.2-ounce volumes, but the glass is much larger than that. The reason why is because they have to have enough glass to contain not just the beer, the volume of beer, but it's going to release this very voluminous head. Belgian yeast produces a lot of carbonation. It adheres to the structures in the malt and everything else that's contained in the beer, and it releases a very voluminous head. It's very thick, very heavy, very big head. And so Belgians love that big head character. It's like, you can talk about head all you want. It's okay. But what happens is that head contains a lot of bubbles. Those bubbles, when they pop, they release a lot of these delicate oils. These very delicate oils contain a lot of aromas. They fuel the olfactory senses. You smell the stuff, and all of a sudden, you think the beer smells wonderful. Just like food, if it smells good, guess what? you think it tastes good too. So you win, you start winning that taste battle before you even taste the beer, because it looked good coming in the glass, because it smelled good whenever it started opening up. Here's another thing too. Whenever you start drinking that beer, they want that rim to be wide enough so whenever you take a sip, your nose goes within the lip of that glass, so you get the aroma and the flavor at the same time. It overwhelms the senses with all that fruit, with all that spice, with all that acidity some of these Belgian beers have, and all the other understated nuances that Trappist beers come with, that makes the beer just a culinary experience, sip after sip until the very last one. And so that's the reason why a very wide glass, very chalice, they really like it. So you can just give that thing a little swirl, and all of a sudden one swirl starts to release that head experience again, starts to bring carbonation on the suspension, refuels the head, refuels those aromas every time you swirl. So they kind of love that characteristic. So they love that very wide brim glass to be able to do that with. Now, same thing when it comes to like big barley wines. They're huge. They're intense. They're crazy aromatic, even if you don't do anything. Even if you don't swirl. Even if you don't get a head character. We're talking about beers that start to share characteristics of sherry, brandy, Madeira, port. Those kind of aromas. You don't need bubbles to really fuel the senses with aromatics. So then you put those in a little bitty brandy snifter. Because those things are usually 12, 30, 50, maybe 20% alcohol in some extreme cases. And all of a sudden, now it carries a huge fuel of aromas. And so it really doesn't take a whole lot. You can really condense those things, so you get a lot of bang for your bucks. It's very small. It's a very bulb-like glass, and it's on a stem. And so it really starts to sort of channel those aromas. So it's very delicate. So even if you only get 4 or 6 ounces, it's enough to really satisfy that session with that one beer. Now, you mentioned another thing, Scott, about the stemware. I really like what stemware does for glass because it makes it ergonomically comfortable. Hold onto the glass. It has just this very subtle way you kind of swirl and kind of hold onto the glass that makes it comfortable. Pint glasses sometimes aren't the most comfortable. They like to slip out of your hands, especially as they sweat and they do other things. Stemware removes a little bit of that from your hand, so you actually hold it on the stem, and your hand doesn't warm the glass as much, or at least prematurely. So it actually it warms up on its own natural way, and your hand doesn't really interfere with that. Plus, it's just a little bit more comfortable when you're tasting a very delicate beer or a beer with some nuanced flavors or some things that are just under the surface, you kind of like to hold on to it a little bit more delicately and swirl this kind of thing, so sip on them gently and kind of let your palate grow up as the beer releases more flavors, releases more aromas as it warms. So there's a delicacy and there's a procession. It's almost architectural about how your taste grows up as the beer warms and as you go through the session. And if we're paying attention, the beer can actually release a whole lot of culinary art, even if it's a very soft beer. And so those are some things I really like about what glassware can do that most people just don't really pay attention to. People ask me, it's like, does the glassware make the beer taste better? No, it doesn't make the beer taste better, but it changes the way you perceive the beer. And then after you, if a beer is given to you at $3 and if it's given to you in the wrong glass, you may feel like it didn't taste like $3 beer. But if it's given to you in the right glass, it changes your perception of what you just tasted. I feel like you may have gotten $4 or $5 or $6 of experience out of it, even though the beer really didn't have anything in it that made it taste better.
Or
you
may be able to smell it better or...
Yeah, it heightens your senses. It heightens your awareness. The beer didn't change. You changed.
Well, and I I kind of came from the world of wine before I was even in beer. I managed a wine bar in Louisville for a few years, and so I learned how to analyze what I'm drinking by learning the process of tasting wine. And a lot of that, and so I think it's no coincidence that the glasses that I like for beer resemble wine glasses, because I'm used to that process of evaluating, looking at it. If I'm holding a shaker glass and I'm trying to evaluate the beer, I'm having to move my hand to kind of, get it out of the way so I can really see what the beer looks like. Where if I have a stem, I can hold it up to the light and I can look at it, I can swirl it, I can do all those things that I am comfortable doing in that whole process. And, whether it's a conscious evaluation or not, I'm doing that with everything I drink. And I may not be taking notes, but I'm at least observing it.
And here's what I'll say. If you're at home and if you're trying to think about what glass goes with what beer, don't worry. There's not a ton of rules whenever it comes to this stuff. This is beer. This is the common beverage. Play around. Find out what glass suits you best and find out what beer suits best and what glass for you. It's okay to kind of play around with this stuff. Trial and error works real well. But if you're at home, if you want to get the maximum benefit out of a beer, don't be afraid. Just put a beer into an oversized wine glass. That stuff usually works just fine.
Yep.
If that's all you have, then that will work okay too. That's a fantastic way to start. But Scott's right. Utilitarian shaker pint really does very little to enhance the character of any beer, so I don't recommend those kind of shaker pints. Get something with some shape. Get something with some texture. Get something with some taper to it. Get something that has a little bit of character to it. And before you know it, you'll be experiencing that beer in a whole new light.
One of the breweries I love, the glassware that they do, is Unibrew. I think Unibrew's glassware is always really, really appropriate to the style of beer. They always have an interesting sort of shape, an interesting, you know, kind of way that they pair their beers with the glassware. I've had a couple of really good ones from there. The Blanche de Chambly glass is really, really great.
Yep.
Sort of like that elongated champagne flute.
Yep.
And then they're just normal, you know, stem is really, really nice.
And it's fun because just a subtle shape change, a little wider, a little more taper, a little elongated. Like you said, those little things are that can make a difference in between beer styles to make maximize the character of one versus suppressing the character of another.
Right.
It's really kind of amazing when you start getting that kind of stuff and playing it out. And even though I kind of know the rules, I play around with this stuff too to try to test these things, these theories. And before you know it, I'm stumbling onto something that I like that I didn't know that I liked. Sometimes I stumble onto something that wasn't a prescribed notion. This is beer goes with this glass. But guess what? It worked anyhow, and it worked better for whatever reason. So it's kind of fun. So I tell people to play around. This is a playground. This is a playground for flavor, for texture, for appearance. You know, use whatever you have at your disposal and have fun.
All about glassware. Thank you so much, Scott, for joining us. We appreciate it. It was awesome. And we definitely appreciate the beers that you brought us to Pazzo's because those were great. But Pazzo's podcast episode number 31, or 32, rather. Sorry. Man, I'm getting old.
And forgetful.
I'm starting to forgetting things. You know what I mean?
Where's the car keys, Josh?
Yeah, right?
Do you know?
I don't know.
That's a sore subject today.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? God,
is,
guys. Way to go. You're busting my chops over here. Episode number 32. Thank you so much for listening. Pazzo's podcast, WLXG on Instagram and Pazzo's podcast on Twitter. If you guys want to give us a follow, we would definitely appreciate it. You can follow Kevin at BeerConnect and
I appreciate
get
the
all
follow.
The information on beers and especially the reviews. Those are fantastic. Always look forward to those. He's on Instagram as that as well. Thank you guys so much for listening. It is Pazzo's podcast.